The date is September 27th, 2021, and it's time for another episode of The Other Side, the official podcast of the finest comedy club in all the land, the DC Improv. I'm your host, Chris White. The improv schedule for 2021 is just about complete. Lots of famous faces on the way, familiar club favorites, but also a couple people we've never had the pleasure of seeing before. One person making his DC Improv debut is Pete Lee, who will headline November 12th through the 14th. Pete started out in Wisconsin, that's where he's from, and he's been in the comedy business for more than 20 years. In the early 2000s, he set up shop in New York City, and more recently, last few years, he's been based out of LA. And while he has been living on the coast these last few years, his brand is still very much Midwestern nice. That's his onstage persona. That's what a lot of his routine's about. What it's like being a nice guy in modern America. Maybe the only one left. Pete had a real career breakthrough just a few years ago when he made his first appearance on The Tonight Show with Jimmy Fallon. He was the first stand-up comedian ever to get a standing ovation for performing on that show. He's been kind of riding that gravy train ever since. Most recently, he released a new special. Came out on Showtime in the summer of 2021. It's called Pete Lee, Tall, Dark, and Pleasant. And of course, now he's ridden the show business rocket all the way to the top because he's appearing on this podcast. Joining us now from Los Angeles, it's Pete Lee. Pete, it's great to have you on our podcast. And I want to start with this. I guess your brand, which I've seen you talk about this in other interviews, your kind of raison d'etre, is this idea of kind of Midwestern nice, that's kind of your vibe, that's what you put out there in the universe. I guess my question is that just on stage, or is this something that pervades your entire character?
Oh, I'm a giant asshole. I'm Krusty the Clown. I got off stage and I immediately... I don't light a cigarette. I have a woman who's under me, like an underling, light it for me. I'm like, woman, light my cigarette. And then I'm like, ugh. And then I'm like, sorry, my dick's out. And,
you never apologize for that. Never,
never apologize for that. Ugh, this is your job. Not as my employee, but as a woman. No, I am, Yeah, that's how terrible I am in reality. No, I'm this person. And, you know, my point of view really is just how much it kind of sucks to be nice. And did you notice that sentence? Like, my point of view is kind of how much it sucks to be nice. I should have said, a more direct person would have said, my point of view is how much it sucks to be nice. But I'm like, oh, I still got to sugarcoat that. With the word kind of, but yeah, I am a very loving person. I'm a very kind person. I would say that the asterisk to that of who I am off stage is I really appreciate comedians that have the opposite point of view of me. I really love, like, some of my best friends are people that just have the gnarliest points of view, and I will howl laughing. Because I'm just like, how do you think that and say it and just like get away with that? Or like, cause I've even tried edgy comedy and the audience is like, nope, not who you are, not working. And, it's not gonna happen. And, it's weird because it really is the way that my brain sees the world. And one of the things that I learned in college was in my last philosophy class. I asked why, I asked my philosophy teacher, right before I graduated, why we go to a liberal arts college. And she was like, it's not so you can learn a bunch of crap about crap. She goes, it's because you want to be able to put different lenses over your eyes. You want to be able to put the science lens and the English lens and maybe you took a religion course. You want to put that lens over your eyes, sociology, psychology, architecture, whatever. Maybe you took a gym class. You want to look at the world like a basketball player. And I'm a big fan of being able to, even though you dominantly have one point of view, I'm a big fan of being able to look at the world through different points of view. And I think that's one of the reasons why I like being a comedian, because most of my friends have strong different points of view. And I appreciate that. And I even like to try on those hats every once in a while. And it's fun. But the way that I naturally look at the world, it's like my brain, I have like the brain of like a really sweet Midwestern hockey mom, Like I saw my friend Esther the other day, and she's so sexy, and she had on this like cute tiny little pencil dress, and I wanted to say the words, "Oh, isn't that ever wonderful?" And I didn't say that. Like, that's not even a joke. That's what I thought in my head is, "Oh, isn't that ever wonderful?" And like, within that, it's not that I'm asexual. Like, I saw how sexy your legs were. I saw like how sexy your body was, but my brain wanted to tell her, "Oh, isn't that ever wonderful?" And, so I was like, "Hey, Esther, cool dress, you know?" And she's like, "Thanks." And so I always have to put my internal monologue into like a Google Translate for like what somebody who wouldn't freak people out would sound like. And but that being said, you know, being a comedian, one of my favorite things in the world is to rip on stuff, to like break things down and analyze it, to kind of sit in the back of the class and, you know, and like sit with a friend and just roast everything, you know, because like roasting is a part of what we do. And I found my girlfriend, Nicole, she's extremely witty. She's not in comedy. She works in tech. She's one of the smartest people I've ever met. And I'm not saying this because she listens to the podcasts that I do. we've all heard that comedian boyfriend. She's just she's the one. And like, we're all like bullshit. But like, Nicole is like, she really honestly is the one, but she's so witty. And like, you know, I'm going to kind of backtrack to go move forward. So I've studied improv and sketch a lot. I studied at the UCB. People may love this or hate this that hear it, but a long time ago, I used to be Louis C.K.'s opening act. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that I sat down with Louis and I was like, I think I know what you're doing. And he's like, "What am I doing? What am I doing on stage?" Because like most comedians were looking at his writing and they were like, "I don't know what you're doing. Like, what is Louis doing? I don't know why I can't put it into the general like setup, punchline, tag, 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 you know, format." And most of it's because not Louis does do the setup, punchline, and tag, but usually the punchline is the first beat to an improv game. And he's doing a one-man sketch on stage, essentially, where he introduces the ridiculous thing and then he heightens. And it's just a different joke structure than most, you know, most jokes. And then he weaves in and out stand-up structure with sketch and improv structure because he was a sketch writer.
Yeah, yeah.
And you know, and he worked for Conan. And, you know, Conan's one of the most brilliant sketch writers ever. I mean, like if you watch Conan will just in an interview create a sketch with someone else and they'll play it to every single beat. And, you know, Conan, he's a genius, you know? But anyway, so I was like, "That's what you're doing." And Louis was like, "That's what I'm doing." And I was like, "Wow, oh my God, I figured it out." And he goes, "Yeah, but did you?" He goes, "Did you figure it out? Did you truly figure it out because you sat in the back of the room and you looked at the structure and saw what I'm doing? Or could you actually go and study it and learn how to replicate that style a little bit if you wanted to?" And I'm like, "Oh, okay. Like, you challenged me, master." And he's like, "Yeah, you should go sign up for classes at the UCB." And I was like, "Well, I feel weird doing that because I've already had a Comedy Central special. And won't that be weird?" And he's like, "You need to let go of your ego and get better at comedy." Huh. And, I remember at the time I was in the semifinals of Last Comic Standing, and I was like, "Well, I'm going to be going on to the finals of Last Comic Standing." And Louis goes, "No," he goes, "You're going to lose because I believe you're funny and it's a shitty TV show." And he's like, "They pick shitty people. And so they're going to reject you." And he's like, "When you're walking backstage after they've not picked you and they've picked someone you hate," he goes, "You're going to go, I'm going to take that class." And I was like, "Yeah, you're right. I'm totally going to take that." So I was walking backstage. I remember the camera was in my face and I was like, I need to take those UCB classes. So I took all the improv classes, all the sketch classes. It took me like 2.5 years to do all of it, but I started to learn that structure. And anyway, the point behind that was that, like, you know, within that, you also learn to, within a sketch, like, be a different point of view, write it from a different point of view. and also just learn to love to riff and improvise. And my girlfriend and I, she's been coming out on the road with me because she can work from wherever. And it's so funny because like pretty much all day, like if we're traveling through an airport, if we're sitting on an airplane, if we're out to eat, we just sit and roast the shit out of everyone around us. And it's so much fun, like so much fun to the point where like I'm in my notes document writing stuff down going, that's a bit, that is so such a bit. But that being said, to loop it back to my comedic point of view, is that there's stuff that I will enjoy from sort of that mean girl, yeah, you know, ripping point of view, where I can take a bit like that and like just take the what's funny of it, and I can kind of Google translate it back into what my comedic voice would say. And I don't know how I'm going to do it, but yesterday there's a guy, we got those upgrades. We got the lay down seats on the flight from Chicago back to LAX. Like the like, you know, the ones where you're like an asshole and you're like, there's this guy in front of us that was sleeping on his stomach on a plane. And I've just never even considered that it was possible that somebody could sleep on their stomach, be a stomach sleeper on an airplane. And she went to the bathroom and this guy's just passed out like 9 Jägermeisters, you know, like old liquor reference here.
You'd be like responsible. Deep. If you're that drunk, you should definitely be sleeping on your stomach. You know what? That's an old college rule, right?
Yeah. It's a very responsible thing to do. But this guy, he was sleeping on his stomach and she's just standing there going, Pete, this guy's sleeping on his stomach on an airplane. And I'm like going, like Dumb and Dumber laughing, like, and I just start writing it down. And like, I don't know how I would Google translate into that. Like I wrote down, like, I just want to be like, I want to be so rich that I can sleep on my stomach on an airplane. You know, like that's kind of where I would, where it's more of a compliment instead of a degrading thing. But I don't know. So that's kind of the process. And I feel like I do have that mean voice in my head. I do have fun writing from that and riffing from it, but ultimately everything kind of has to come from where I come from when I'm on stage.
There's a great, I was going through a lot of your social stuff, and there's one stand-up clip you have posted on there. It's you dealing with a drunk heckler, and the woman is barely intelligible, and then you start calling her, you know, like, I speak Walmart and all this. But the best part to me, the thing that really makes the clip for me watching this as you're performing, is at the end, I'm so sorry I said that, and I sincerely apologize. It's like, you don't give it to this lady, but you get at her, and then you're like, I'm really sorry, I feel bad for saying that, and you know, and it's like, ah. Yeah, you handled the heckler, but you apologized for it at the end. It's very interesting. Yeah,
yeah, and that's the way I guess that's kind of with the way my brain works is like I come up with mean stuff to say, but I really truly didn't want to ruin her night, and I didn't want to make her feel bad. And I know comedians that do this, and I've done it myself. And you know, there's that comedian Steve Hofstetter who on YouTube has series,
heckles, like, right. Yeah. Him taking down hecklers and stuff like that.
Yeah. It's every single one is comedian takes down heckler or destroys heckler. That's what it is. Comedian destroys heckler. And I know people with that mentality, and they'll get off stage and they'll be like, oh, I just destroyed that lady. Or like, I destroyed that guy. And anytime that I've ever felt like I destroyed somebody, I'm like, I just ruined somebody's night that needed to have a good time. Like they came out here to have a good time, and maybe they're an asshole. And like there have been a few cases in my comedy career where I really felt like the person, like I could get a good sense in that snapshot of that person that they needed their life ruined in that moment, you know, like, cause I think that you can ruin their night, but you could also point out something about them that they've never seen before that would just be truly hurtful for a long time.
You were the turning point that affected a positive change in their life.
Yeah. Like there are going to be relatives that are going to be like, I don't know what happened, but he's different now. You know, I don't ever really want to do that, but there have been times where I've gone real hard at somebody, but even then I get off stage and I'm like, I shouldn't have said all that. Like, or if I'm in the merch line and I've really like destroyed heckler, I'll like give the guy a free t-shirt and be like, hey man, I'm really sorry. Or I'll be like, can I buy you a beer? I entertained a whole audience, on basically as with you as the, you know, antagonist, And, you know, I'm sorry. And I try to make it up.
Yeah.
You know, I've found people on social media before where I thought I was too mean and like said, sorry. So that's why in the moment in that video, and anytime that I kind of go a little bit hard on somebody, I'm like, hey, I'm so sorry. I'm really sorry.
It's a different way of controlling a room. You know, actually I do want to ask. So, you know, everyone talks about the state of the world today and people are getting angrier and more divided and all this stuff. You know, you've been doing comedy for what, more than two decades?
24 years in January it will be. Yeah.
So as a comedian and even as a person, as we go forward in life, as you get older, as the world evolves around you, is it harder to be nice than it used to be?
Yeah, because no matter what, you're going to be an asshole at some point, you know? Like I did a college last weekend. I did UW-Platteville and you know, or I guess here, let me give you this example. I did Michigan Tech. And afterwards I got a really heated email from somebody in the crowd. It was a crowd of 1,200 people in a theater, which we can debate whether or not that's good right now in COVID Delta. But I did that and, you know, whatever. And I would say that there were 1,199 people that enjoyed themselves. And the one person that didn't wrote an email. And this email was like, first of all, it was hilarious because this person was like, you know, I went to your show tonight and I wanted to walk out, but my friend said, no, you should stay. And first of all, if you're ever at a comedy show and you're like, I think I want to walk out, seriously, walk out.
Yeah.
Like nobody's keeping you there. It's not, you know, it's not mandatory that you stay. If you're just like, man, there's something in my past, because a lot of times when people feel offended or they feel triggered, it really has nothing to do with the comedic content that's going on. It usually has to do that you have something in your past that really hurt you that might even seem really random, and a comedian triggers it. But the thing that people need to separate from a psychology standpoint is that the thing that just triggered you has nothing to do with your feelings.
Yeah.
Your feelings have everything to do with something that is very solid in your past that hurt a lot. And I've been through a lot of therapy and I know this, but this person was like, yeah. And then I wanted to, I said to my friends, I was like, no, I'm walking out. By the way, I don't know if this is the voice of the person writing the email, but it was the dude. And I'm pretty sure that this was their voice. Like, nah, I'm really going. And then they're like, stay, man. And he's like, and I'm a tough person. He goes, I'm a member of our military. I'm in the ROTC at Michigan Tech. And in my head, I was like, no, you're not. You're in the fake college military. You're not in the real military. Like, I've gone over and entertained the troops and none of them have been like, man, I know we're over here doing this, but thank God for the ROTC at Michigan Tech. Like, they're really protecting Michigan Tech. The wall that has been built around that by the fortress of the Michigan Tech ROTC is impenetrable. And by the way, if you're in the ROTC and right now you're going, Pete, that's not true. We actually do a lot of stuff. I'm sure that you do. I'm just trying to rip on this one person. But also, if this person is going to go into our military, I don't know if that's a good thing, because this person was so weak-minded that, like, if you sent them into a war zone, this person would be like, I don't really want to otherize the enemy. You know, like it's like really an us versus them. And I don't believe in that dichotomy. So I'm triggered and then they'd get shot. But so see, this is an example.
This story.
Yeah. I guess this is a good example of me being kind of a dick. I read this message and I was like, well, I wonder what I said that offended this person. And this person was like, one of the first things that I said is like, I have about 10 minutes of bits on COVID, because I'm a firm believer that if we don't laugh, we cry. And it's been a really hard thing. And one of the reason why comedians exist is not to like necessarily demean things, but there's the saying, make fun of it. I don't know if we make fun of things, but we make fun out of things. So whenever somebody goes, you can't joke about that, I'm like, yeah, we can. Like we can joke about it. The worst stuff is what we're supposed to be joking about. Our function in society is actually to take sad shit and make it palatable or make people understand it through humor. That's what the purpose is. So of course I'm going to go up on stage and talk about COVID. And the first thing that I said, I was like, hey, who here's vaccinated? And then I have a fun vaccination joke. And I don't really know how this joke could really be offensive to anybody. And this person was like, I'm triggered. You don't know the year that I've had. And I, of course, I didn't write back to them, but I'm like doing my retorts right now. But, oh, you don't, I don't know the year you've had. Is COVID just your thing?
Yeah.
You know, like it was a giant thing. There was a death ticker that went into the millions. And this person's like, this survivor is like, you don't know what we've been through, or you don't know what, like, and I'm like, I know exactly what I've had friends die from it. Like I, you know, we all went through it. It wasn't Mike's COVID, you know, like,
it's like Mike's hard lemonade, Mike's COVID.
Yeah. And then this person was like, and then you proceeded to talk about women, which I'm like just very pro women. And I do bits that are extremely pro women, but a lot of people don't understand that you can create humor out of something that's actually on the side of people. You can advocate for people through humor. And, and then it was like a laundry list of other things. And it was like, I can't believe you're a professional comedian and da, 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 da. And I read this on the airplane. And like, if it sounds like I'm bitter, I really read it kind of like I see things when I'm sitting with my girlfriend. I was just reading it, roasting it the whole time going, it's because it's so funny when somebody's that emotional. It's hilarious. And I don't even remember what the initial question was to this, but it was something about like,
is it harder to be nice? Is it harder to be nice in this modern day?
Yeah, it's harder to be nice because no matter how nice you are, and especially if you brand yourself as a kind person, then you're never kind enough. And I've had shows at universities where I use gender pronouns and I'll say he, she, and you know, when I'm talking about people in my life. And but then, you know, a good example is I talked to a student in the crowd this last week and I said, hey, I'm going to ask you, I'm going to talk to you now. But I want to know what your gender pronouns are. And this person was like, I'm a they, them. And I'm like, great. And the crowd kind of laughed at that. And I went, by the way, when they just laughed at that, I wasn't making fun of the they, them culture. So I had to like give a disclaimer of like, I wasn't making fun of that.
Yeah.
I literally was sincerely asking you that. And I think just the way my tone was or whatever, when I said great, the crowd kind of laughed, you know, cause it was punchy. But I had a moment with the student where I'm like, are you okay? And should I stop talking to you right now? Or are you fine? And this they, them was like, I'm fine. Cause most of the, I would say 99% of the people in that community that everybody stereotypes as uptight are super fucking cool. And they have edgy senses of humor and they're awesome.
They can take it.
Literally they're awesome. but that being said, I'll have people that will come up to me in the crowd where I'm just talking about my experiences and I'll be like, yeah, my mom, she went to the grocery store, and people will, they'll send an email and be like, you talked about your mom and you used a gender pronoun. And I'm like, well, that's the one that my mom goes with. And that's the one that I go with. And I'm like extremely happy to honor your pronouns, but those are mine.
Yeah.
And
it's a two-way street, right? They have to respect your choice as well. Yeah.
Yeah. It's a two-way street. And, it's just one of those things where like you, and I've also offended people. I offend people a lot because sometimes I'll even talk about politics and like I'll rip on Trump in a way where the Trump people will like it. And then I rip on Joe Biden in ways that the Biden people and the anti-Biden people will like it. But when I kind of start to get into it, I'll be like, look, here's the thing. I'm a big history fan. And I know that our country was founded on people who disagreed with each other, you know, like Hamilton and Jefferson just fought tooth and nail over, like, literally the argument we're having now is was their argument back yep. then, that just like more people got into it. And perhaps it might have even been settled back then if Hamilton wouldn't have been an asshole that entered into a duel and died. And
if he hadn't banged that guy's wife. Yeah, right.
Yeah, yeah. If he would, yeah. Miss Mariah Reynolds, if she wouldn't, she ruined everything. Well, actually, he did with his dick, but anyway, and sidebar, by the way, like in Hamilton, the musical, they made it seem like he had one affair, you know, with Miss Mariah Reynolds.
He was laying before he was, I'm sure.
Yeah, before he was married to Eliza, I think he got married. He was fucking, he never stopped fucking. And then they found about that one thing. When have we ever seen like a political pervert that had one mistress
complete fidelity to that one side piece and nothing else. Yeah. Right.
Yeah. It was. Yeah. And just the story that he told, like she came over, she was like, I know you're a man of honor, you know, like, and he's like, I'll walk her home. It's like, no, like you'd fucked her before. Come on, Hamilton. But anyway, all that being said, like, I will say to the crowd, I'll go, look, like I'm going to talk about politics now, but please know that, like, let's say the most extreme version of what you think could happen right now, conservative wise, is you're a Trump person, which I'm like, by the way, if you think that's conservative, I've been to the Middle East several times and done shows and you have no idea what conservative is. So it's hilarious. Even your point of view is hilarious on this, you know? And I'll be like, you know, our country was founded on that you can like anybody that you want to, you can vote for anybody that you want to, and that's your thing. That's one of the, like, we don't have a whole lot of power, but you have that power. And I'll get people who, like, on either side of that, I'll get an email that will be like, I can't even believe that you said that people can like Trump if they want to. I don't like him, but I am at least reasonable enough of an adult to go, there are people that like him, and I accept that. And that's, like, I think that's a good place to be in. But it's so funny that there are people that are just like, that can't even be a possibility. And I'm like, then you're going to be angry forever. Because, like, those are the type of people, you know, from therapy, I've learned that, like, there are two types of people. There are people that go, you know what? I can't change the world, but I can change the way that I feel about the world. And I can change how I react to it. And then there are people that are like, I'm not going to be okay unless I change everyone. And that's impossible. And the first people that I talked about are called adults. And the second group is called children. And so, like, whenever somebody comes at me like that, I always read the email in this voice, because it's just a very 8-year-old point of view. And it's also a point of view that's being, like, wildly disseminated on social media, that, like, is sort of like, if you don't have this point of view, then you're not part of the solution. And I'm like, if you have that point of view, it's poison. Like, yeah. You know, they say, like, poison is the only toxin, or what is it? Anger is the only thing that poisons its own container. Yeah. Is a quote. Yeah. And I'm like, oh, you're just poisoning your own container. Like, you know, the theory of, and I'm getting off on a tangent, but, like, you know, the theory of, and it goes around a lot, that if you're not angry, you're part of the problem. You've yep. seen that on social
yeah.
media.
Yep. Yep.
And I'm like, whoever came up with that and disseminated that is somebody who's trying to take down that group. Because if you're poisoning yourself with anger, you are actually eroding yourself. You're not being strong by being angry. You're eroding your group. And I believe in the power the law of attraction. I think that you need to live positively, live with your strength, attract positive things, do great things. And so that whole notion of, if you're not angry, you're part of the problem. I'm like, oh, one of the most racist motherfuckers on the planet probably came up with that.
Yeah.
and when he dropped that down and people picked it up and ran with it, like a fishing line that's about to scoop you out of the water.
Yeah, right. He poisoned.
He was like, holy shit, it worked. Like, I don't know who that guy was, but yeah, that's some evil shit right there. And I don't know. And by the way, as a kind person, I know that I sound like I'm being very cutting when I say that, but like, I want people to be more kind to themselves. I want people to love themselves more. And if you are somebody who's heavily adopted the idea of, if I'm not angry, I'm part of the problem, I want you to maybe take a look at that and go, holy shit, that's poison. You know,
like, I think that's a great message. I really do. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So let me ask, we've already been talking for about half an hour, so I don't want to keep you too much longer, but
oh yeah.
Yeah. But, this idea of, this philosophy of being positive, being kind, being nice. You know, there's a lot of places that could come from. Obviously you're from Wisconsin originally, and there is that stereotype of Midwestern nice, the Rosen Island that's in everyone's head, right? The Minnesota nice as well. Do you think it is a regional thing? Do you think it's something you get from your family? Is it something you get from therapy? Like you've mentioned, you've been doing things in therapy. Is there any one place that you really think this is why I wound up being a nice person?
Yeah. And by the way, your shirt that says Snappers, is that the Beloit Snappers?
It is the Beloit Snappers. Yeah, it is.
Oh, my God. Yeah, wow. Yeah. All right. Yeah. You've leaned back a couple of times and I'm like, is he wearing a Beloit Snappers shirt? Are you from Wisconsin?
No, I had a buddy who got basically wanted to do his bachelor party a couple of years ago in he wanted to go see a Brewers game. So we did go see a Brewers game, but I went out early and I was driving around. And I was like, I'll go see the Beloit Snappers. Why not? I'll go check it out. So, yeah.
Yeah. Oh, my God. That's it. Yeah. That's awesome. One of the guys that I went to high school with, Jeff, he played for the Beloit Snappers.
Yeah.
And they used to be the Beloit Brewers. And then so he was one of the rare people that while they were the Beloit Brewers, he played for them. And then they transitioned to the Snappers. Yeah. So I was like, oh, that's so cool. You played for one team, but you have two jerseys. That's really great.
Yeah, I get the shirts everywhere I can go. And actually, I like wearing them for exactly this reason, because when you're walking down the street, it's kind of fun. Like, I've been there. It's an instant conversation starter, you know? So,
it really is. It's like being from a small town, and the people from that small town will be like, I know that team. Wow, that's crazy. But yeah, I think my comedic point of view, because, you know, I talk about like, oh, I'm this way because I'm from Wisconsin. But I mean, there are assholes in Wisconsin. There's assholes everywhere. Could you imagine going to an entire state where there are no assholes? That's statistically impossible. But I think that I do have definitely like a Midwestern point of view. Like I said, I think of things like a Midwestern hockey mom. I have this theory that people from Wisconsin, like there's so many functioning alcoholics that we kind of learned this personality from being around drunk people a lot. I think that my personality is kind of like a, and not that I don't drink a considerable amount myself, but like, I think this is sort of the drunk person's mentality of like, you know, fuck you. Ah, fuck you. You want a hug? You know, like that's kind of my mentality, you know, like, ah, oh, lady, don't worry. I speak Walmart. I'm so sorry. I said that. I'm sorry. Let me buy you a beer. I'm sorry. You know, that's kind of my point of view is I even think the Wisconsin accent is sort of a drunk accent.
It's not regional at all.
It's just drunk people. It's going, hey, do you want a beer? It's just like, you're just kind of slurring your words. But I also think that it does come from, you know, therapy and maturity. I've been in therapy for 15 years. It's weird, you know, like, everybody always goes, go to therapy and you're going to be better. And I don't think I'm better. I think I just have a better understanding of stuff when I do feel angry or upset or, you know, whatever. And I know how to like chew on it and dissect it and go, okay, that's what that links to. And that's why, you know, my girlfriend saying this didn't really upset me. I'm upset about this, you know, or whatever. And then I can it kind of dissolves and I go, okay, that's what that is. But yeah, you know, another thing that is the reason why I'm like this, and it's a big thing. So I grew up, my brothers and I, we would fight each other, like fist fight each other.
Yep. As brothers should. Yeah.
Yeah. And there was this family in my neighborhood called the Blazers. And like, it was funny. One of the Blazers went into my mom's flower shop the other day. My mom, she doesn't own one, but she works at a flower shop. And one of the Blazers came in and she was like, he was just such a nice man. And he talked about how much he really liked hanging out with you growing up. And I was like, Mom, we beat the shit out of each other. Like just on a weekly basis, me and my two brothers would go up to the Blazers and there was these woods there are these woods that were like in between my house and the Blazers, and we'd fight the Blazers in the woods. Like the oldest brother would fight the oldest brother. My middle brother would fight. There were like, by the way, there were three of us, and there were like eight Blazers. So we each had to take on 2.14 Blazers or 2.24 Blazers. And we would always beat up the Blazers, even though there are more of them than us. And, but like, yeah, I think it was good because it taught me how to fight. And, you know, later on, I got into martial arts and, you know, I'm actually a black belt in Taekwondo. And like I was a pretty accomplished kickboxer when I was like a teenager and in college. And I was really good at fighting right away. And my master Fox was like, he was like, I don't know where this comes from. I'm like, we beat up the Blazers constantly. but the reason why that plays into it is, and by the way, when I say that I'm a fighter, I don't think that discounts any of my kindness. Some of the most kind people that I know are martial artists. And if you ever see a guy at a bar who's very calm when a fight breaks out, that's the martial artist. The guy who's not the martial artist, is the guy trying to start the fight because he wants to have a dick measuring contest because he's unsure of the length of his dick. And so he's going, can I fight? Could I beat that guy up? The martial artist goes, hey, you know what? If I fight that guy, I'm either going to end up in the hospital or jail, and I don't want to go to either.
Yeah. The amount of damage I'm going to do to this dude is going to be, yeah.
Yeah, it's just not worth it. And I don't know this guy. So, like, why would I even want to hurt this person that I don't even know, you know? And so that all of that being said, when I was – so there's a story that links back to my kind of OCD about being kindness. So – I was growing up and I was like really poor. Like my family, we didn't have anything. My mom was a Red Lobster waitress. My dad was an interior decorator, but he had gone off to California, and it was that era where he paid child support. We kind of mowed through it. And then, you know, my mom, like we didn't have a lot, you know? And anyway, so I got really good at skateboarding. I really dove into it. Like a lot of kids that have, you know, some tough childhoods, I dove into skateboarding. It's a great outlet. I highly recommend it. If you have kids that are going through some shit, get them into skateboarding. I used to do the Big Brothers Big Sisters program where I would only take on skateboarders, and then I teach them how to skateboard because I think it's a great outlet for people who, I don't know, may have some childhood anger issues or something like that, you know, or they're upset about stuff. Anyway, I was skateboarding and I got really good at skateboarding to the point where I got sponsored. I got sponsored by Alva Skateboards, and then I got sponsored by Vision Streetwear.
Wow.
Because the local skate shop, they were like, why do you wear the same outfit to skateboard every single day? And I was like, because I have one outfit. You know, I actually had three, but I needed the other two for school so I didn't stink the next day. And so Vision found that out, and they're like, we'll send you a box of clothes, dude. That's crazy that you're this good and this poor. So I got sponsored by those two. And then all of a sudden skateboarding went from being something that like outliers did to being something that like everyone wanted to do. It was like the Tony Hawk era had exploded.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden I was the kid at school that when Tony Hawk would come and do a demo at the Turf in Milwaukee or Rotation Station skate park in Rockford, I'd be like his little ripper opener that was like, hey, this kid's 13 and, you know, and he can do big airs. And so everybody at my school was like, Pete's so cool. Like but previously they were like, Pete lives in a shitty house and fuck him.
Yeah. That loser skateboard kid, then, right? Yeah.
Yeah. And now everybody wanted to be my friend. So one day I remember it was kind of the coolest kid in school's birthday party. And this kid had become my best friend. I fell skateboarding and my knee pad slipped down and I just cut my knee worse than anything. And this kid, it's his birthday. He's feeling it. And by the way, we're in seventh grade, like, you know, it's seventh grade. Oh. And he runs over to me because he had right guard in his skateboarding backpack and he sprays right guard in my cut and everybody laughs. Well, I just knocked him out. like just not even a thought that went from my brain to my nervous system to my arm. I was just in pain and it was like my soul knocked him out. It was just like pain, boom, you know, like person who's fought the Blazers his whole life, And now Craig Knutson is knocked out and twitching on the flat bottom of the skateboard ramp. And I'm going, oh, shit. I'm like, oh, no. Oh, God. And all the girls from my grade were there. Like, you know, all like everybody was there because everybody, I'm just saying his name because he's a good guy and we're really good friends now.
Yeah.
Everybody was friends with Craig Knutson. And then they went to his birthday party at his house. And it was like everybody hated me from that point on. And so like from seventh grade until I graduated from high school, pretty much everyone in my grade hated me because of that one moment, which I don't think is an accurate snapshot of who I am. But, you know, I was forced to basically be as nice as I could to everybody because everybody hated me. And I guess I could have gone the other way and I could have been an asshole and embraced this like villain mode that I was in. But instead I was like, you know what? I'm going to kill them with kindness. I'm going to make the friends that I can make. I'm also going to make friends in other grades because it was really exclusive to my grade. And there were also a lot of people that didn't really like that popular group that would be nice to me kind of on the down low. But if that group saw people being nice to me, they would torture them.
Yeah.
So like that group was a little bit like the middle school, like Taliban, you know? And I didn't kill Osama bin Laden, but I knocked him out. And that being said, you know, Craig Knutson is not Osama bin Laden. He's a great guy. But, so I really had a tough time but it was like this thing that was ingrained over 7 years of my childhood where I was like, oh my God, if you're ever mean to somebody, it's like going to ruin your life kind of a thing. Like if something bad ever happens, you're going to lose all of your friends and everyone's going to hate you for 7 years, you know, like break a mirror, like, no, like punch Craig Knutson. It's really bad. And so that's one of the reasons why, like my friend, Dan St. Germain, who's a really funny comedian,
very funny.
He was like, dude, you have the personality of someone who was molested. He's like, it's like crazy. Like how you're just like tiptoe, like you don't ever really want to say anything wrong or bad. And I'm like, no, I wasn't molested. I just knocked out Craig Knutson and everybody hated me for 7 years. And since then I've gone through a lot of therapy and I've worked on it. And I've also like, I've gone out for Craig Knutson reached out to me in my adulthood. And he was like, hey man, he's like, I'm in therapy. I'm realizing that I have a lot of guilt about like how I treated you. And, you know, and he's like, it also doesn't help that like I turn on my TV and you're there. And, and so
hard to move so, on.
And he's like, you know, the best revenge is success. And he's like, you're having it. But he's like, I feel really guilty about this. And I just want to buy you a beer and talk about it. So we talked about it. He's like, dude, I was an asshole. And I was like, I've already forgiven you because you were a child. Like you were literally adult you cannot hinge off of what a child did. Like we were both children. I was a child that knocked you out and made you twitch on the half pipe floor. You know, like, I'm sorry that I did that. Like, I'm really sorry that I did that, but also, you know, whatever, but that is something that like, because my personality was marinated in that for so many years and I've gone to, you know, like I've basically tried to correct that and whatever brain mapping that has done in my brain, because I've spent a lot of time doing that, like I'm better now, but it's still in there. And you know, and it's funny because I fly American Airlines, Craig Knutson flies American Airlines. Every once in a while, we'll just run into each other in O'Hare or Phoenix Airport or Charlotte. And he'll be like, man, let's get a beer and we'll get a drink. And then he'll be like, I'm so sorry about that, man. And I'm like, dude, it's 100% fine.
Having beers in an airport, it's okay. Yeah, right?
Yeah. Like, I mean,
Craig wasn't the guy sleeping face down, was he? That's just
no,
make sure.
I wasn't
okay,
Craig.
Right, just making
if
sure.
If it was, I probably would have like woken him up with a wedgie and been like, we're even, Craig. But so I think, yeah, like it's Midwest. It's having gone through a lot of therapy. And then it was that defining moment in my childhood that make me this. And it's kind of funny, not to be a jerk, but every once in a while I'll see a comedian that's kind of, they're seeing a tactic that I do or like kind of borrowing a little bit from, you know, something. And it's kind of evident because a lot of times the setup for their jokes will be a very similar phrase that I use, you know, and I'm going, okay, that guy's, he's trying on what this point of view is like on stage. And but I always, like I've had friends, there was this one Comedy Central clip that came out recently where a kid was kind of emulating me. And And my buddy was like, aren't you worried about that? And I'm like, well, no, because he never went through that shit with Craig Knutson. So he doesn't truly see the world this way. Like, so he can write a joke or two, but he's never going to really, like, this isn't the dominant way that his soul feels.
Yeah.
So he can't write from this authentic place. And if he can, then he should write from that place and he should learn from me and he should learn some of those tactics. And so, but he's also going to figure out what his specific, you know, shade on the spectrum is of that. And maybe right now it's similar to me, but it'll evolve.
Yeah.
And, you know, but yeah, I don't know. By the way, this is a sidebar, and it's not one of your questions, but so my girlfriend, she's in the living room. She works in tech and she does this thing every single time that I'm on a podcast. That's wonderful. And, it's amazing. And, she does this thing where she knows that I'm on a podcast. She knows that if my screen lights up and I see her name, that I'm going to click on it mid podcast. I'm so crazy about her. I love her so much that when I see her name come up on my phone, I'm like, I got to check this. And then usually I'm trying to check it without the person who I'm podcasting with noticing. So I can be like, oh, she's hungry and she wants to eat afterwards or whatever it is. Whatever that is, I love her so much that that's important to me. So she knows that I'm going to do that. So she sends me tits and, she always sends me a tit pic. She started to know that I'm going to show the other podcaster and then we're going to, so I do this game now. It's happened so many times and it's so awesome. She always sends a very creative thing that she always looks at what the podcast is and she does something with her, with her tits that have something to do with the theme of the podcast. I'll give you an example. I did my friend Nigel Barker's podcast, which is called Shaken Not Stirred. And she put two champagne bottles, like mini champagne bottles, over her nipples.
Splits.
And then that
there
was,
you go. Yeah.
That was the picture. So that was a liquor podcast. She did champagne bottles for the DC Improv. And by the way, I'm going to show you this and then it's going to be our responsibility and what I'd like your help with. This is the segment. I'm
sure.
Setting up the segment.
Absolutely.
I need your help writing a reply to her. That's that's what I want.
Okay.
Is
all right.
We have to figure out what the witty reply will be. So because this is the DC Improv podcast, Nicole sent this picture of her, the bottom of her tits out, like an 80s movie, tits. But then the shirt says America and it's
very
got an
nice
eagle on it. And this is a shirt that this is one of my shirts. I cut the sleeves off of it. It's literally my 4th of July shirt that I just wear because it's red, white and blue. It's tie dyed. You look like a redneck asshole.
It's awesome. Yeah,
it's
right.
Barely literate. I love it. It's a kick ass shirt. So she put on that and had an under boob. So what do you think our reply to Nicole should be?
Ooh, that's a good question. Are we talking like a full sentence, a couple words? What do we need here? How much?
It can be anything. It can be a paragraph. It can be one word. It can be anything. But yeah,
that's a good question. I'm trying to think. It's got to be DC related, right? We have to get in that headspace. So if it's about DC, she's saying America.
I'm trying to think of what could we say? There's a Washington Monument in my pants right now. That could be
pretty effective.
That's pretty effective.
That's pretty good.
Go
straightforward to the point. Yeah.
You could go with that one.
Yeah, I'm trying to think what else looks like. Capitol Dome, kind of in the shape of a boob. I don't really know, you know. So.
Yeah, Capitol Dome.
Capitol Domes, you know, like.
Capitol Domes. Okay, yeah. Right? I'm writing these down. Capitol Dome.
You know, like
domes.
the older way of saying like Capitol Knockers, madam. The Sideshow Bob.
I like that one. Monument. All right. I like those both. Let's come up with a couple more. Something DC related. What else is DC? Traffic?
Oh, yeah, always. Well, so we got traffic circles, Congress, history, presidents, Potomac River, the Redskins. I don't know how to do anything with that.
The Redskins.
Formerly the Redskins. I don't really know. Yeah.
Oh, that's funny. You're creating some Redskins around here. I don't know if that's... I don't know. That's even
a bit of a stretch, but you know,
it's a, yeah. Well, so is the Redskin, but boom. Oh,
I feel like it's 18-year-old me would have had this by now. 44-year-old me is like, yeah.
Oh, you're 44 as well. I'm 44. Yeah. Oh, great. You look very young.
Thank you.
All right.
So do you.
Yeah.
We're the same wheelhouse. Yeah. So.
We're the same wheelhouse. Well, yeah, it's really this joke exercise having to write a retort to tits is really, it's sort of a place that our brains don't go to as evolved people. You go, hey, that's like, that's lowbrow, I'm not going to go there. But this is kind of a fun writing exercise because you want to write something lowbrow or like something something kind of disgusting, but you just made me Kamala over my pants.
Well, yeah, that's pretty good.
That's fun.
I'm trying to think of the top of whatever. DC doesn't care about the lower 40%. That's the society-wise.
That's funny.
That's all right. A bit of a stretch. Yep. Yeah.
Lower 40%. Yeah. I like that.
Yeah.
This is fun. This is a fun segment.
Yeah.
By the way, we'll make this interactive for anybody who is on a platform where you can leave comments. Leave comments and let us know what you think the thing should have been. And then honestly, if I read it, like if I'm on YouTube or, you know, Spotify or wherever, I'll actually just randomly send her the text that you want me to send her with no context.
Even better.
Yeah. I think I'm going to, I just,
texting in progress.
Okay, I'm going with, I just Kamala over the inside of my pants.
That's solid. Excellent job. Yeah.
That's solid. I apologize to the vice president with all due respect to your brilliance and your strength. I used your name for that pun, and I apologize, Madam Vice President.
Part of public service. It's really part of what you pay your salary. So your taxes pay her salary. So I think this is all fair game, right?
Yeah, I paid for that joke. Yeah. Okay, we got a laughter emoji back.
There you go. And if you want, you can always walk up towards the vice president's mansion, talk to one of the security guards out front, and you could apologize profusely to them when you're here November 12th to the 14th. That's the way to do it, you know. So.
Yeah, I'll be like, Madam Vice President, I am so sorry. I am so sorry. And then she'll be like, for what? And then I'll show her, and then she'll be like, oh, that's actually pretty hilarious. I feel like a lot of, like, do you remember when people would just say her name wrong?
Oh, yeah.
You remember that?
And
everybody used that as like a lever to be shitty to other people. Like, I think that a lot of people love to bully people for a good cause. And I feel like Kamala Harris, I mean, she's a tough person. She was a DA, you know, law enforcement officer. She's a very strong person. And I feel like everybody that was having that debate, she probably was just like, I don't care.
Like, at some point. She's probably gone through her whole life with people just like, yeah, whatever. It's not worth having the argument. And just, you know. Yeah.
Yeah. She's obviously someone who has moved on greatly from that debate.
Yeah. She's had many worse things said about her, you know. So it's one of those things. If she can't deal with that, you know, she shouldn't be vice president, right? So.
Okay. By the way, Nicole wrote, save some for me. Marriage material. I think the only reply to that is the ring emoji. You got to do that.
Absolutely.
Dude, she's the best. She's absolutely the best. I have friends that they're like, man, you, because we've been dating for 3.5 months now, or maybe 3 months and a week. I don't remember what it is, but, I have friends that they're like, man, like you move kind of fast putting her on your social media. You're moving kind of fast. And I'm like, dude, I like, and then they meet her and they're like, she's so awesome. They're like, move faster. What are you doing? Like if she dumps you, like, she's our friend. You're out.
Pete, you know? you're in your 40s, Pete. You gotta, you know, it's an accelerated timetable at this point in our life, you know, you gotta go.
It really is. Yeah. That's the other thing. People are like, people are suggesting that I should like take, you know, a year or two to like suss it out and da da da. And I'm like, no, I'm 44. Like, I have vetted her. I've asked her all the hard questions. She's asked me all the hard questions. She's worked on herself. You know, like, I've worked on myself. She's amazing. Like, we're just moving forward at the speed that feels right. And this is what feels right. But yeah, that I have a bit in my act where I'm like, God, I loved her immediately. I'm like, I kissed her and I pulled away and I'm like, do you want her to get a dog? And, and the funniest part about that is that, she lives in Arizona, but she's basically been living with me. I live in the Pacific Palisades in Los Angeles. Yeah. Like, I'm a big surfer and I live right on the ocean and I surf every day that I can. It like makes me so happy. And so Nicole's basically been living with me up here, and you know, she still has her place. And for the next 2 weeks, we're going to go down there and live in Arizona. And while I go out on the road, we've been like on the road and then being wherever we're at, like Arizona or here, but predominantly here. And then we're, you know, she's like, look, I know for entertainment, you can't live in Scottsdale, Arizona. So she's like, we're going to pretty much choose your place. But in next week, actually, no, this weekend, her dog that's been staying with her parents for the last while, this little French bulldog named Diesel, we're getting a dog. Like, Diesel's going to come live here. And I already cleared it with, you know, like everybody around in the neighborhood and the HOA and all that stuff. But it is so funny that it's going to be 3.5 months later. And we're like, getting a dog.
Yeah.
No
shame. It's a dog named Diesel. So I think that's okay. It's, you know, a French bulldog, but you know, still Diesel makes up for the lack of size of the overall dog. So I think you're fine.
Yeah. I just think it's going to be funny when people are like, oh, what's your dog's name? And I'll be like, Diesel. Like, didn't see that from you.
Wear the America crop top while you're saying that. And I think it'll be more believable. You know, that's the way.
Yeah. And I've gained a little bit of weight in COVID. So same tits out the bottom.
Same underboob. Yeah. Nice. Very nice. Same very tits. Nice. I think it would really help sales if we could guarantee right now that you would wear that shirt on stage every day, November 12th. The 14th, that would be great. So
all right, that's what I'm gonna do. And I it's funny, like, the you know, the American flag is something that you know, upsets people right now. And and you know, there's the Spike Lee 1619 project. Like, I've read all about all that stuff. I feel like I can approach that with some understanding of why people would be like, hey, the flag pisses me off, you know, like, so with that being said, but I still wear the shirt because I grew up in an era where the American flag was like, everybody loved it. Like, yeah. Or everybody, it was just like a thing where everybody kind of agreed upon that. And my personality, it's not so much that I love the American flag, but I love things that we can all agree upon. And it bothers me a little bit that we can't agree upon it, because I hate conflict. And now it's weird that this thing that used to give no conflict has a lot of conflict. But so I'll wear it just like around the house kind of a thing, or I'll wear it on 4th of July. But I was wearing it, I think it was like it was like July 10th or something like that. And I'd worn it on 4th of July. And then my friend Ian Edwards.
We talked to Ian before. Yeah, soccer comic. Yep.
One of the funniest comedians that I've ever experienced. I mean, insane writer. I rolled out of bed and that was just kind of on the floor. And so I put it on because I didn't want to go out into my living room shirtless. And Ian goes, yo, man, why are you wearing that? I looked down at it and I was like, yeah, you're right. I was like, it was on my floor. And he's like, why was it on your floor? He's like, why were you wearing it before? And I was like, it's just like, it's kind of a funny, ironic thing. And then I explained the thing that I explained to you before about how the flag used to never piss anybody off. And that's like one of the things that's important to me in life. And he was like, yeah, I would get rid of that shirt. And I haven't gotten rid of the shirt because I'm hoping that at some point, the flag will be something that people like and agree upon again. And I don't know. I don't want to just get rid of something because there's a popular idea floating around. But
well, you know, I think that's one of the things that makes DC so awesome and frustrating at the same time, is you hear all the news stories about how all this division and DC seems to be the center for all this division and conflict and people angry at each other. But if you're walking around the city, it's just filled with these beautiful symbols of theoretically, you know, national unity and togetherness and patriotism. Yes. Which, you know, it's those two things are right on top of each other. So it makes it kind of a cool, unusual place to live, I'd say. Yeah.
It's very unique. And like, I have this fear, because like, I'll just say it, like, I'm a Democrat. Like, I'm probably a centrist Democrat. I don't know where I'm at on the spectrum. But like, I've noticed that some of my Democrat friends, so I have a very good friend who's a Republican, and he's a Trump dude. And I love talking to him, and I love talking shit with him. I love just how whacked out his point of view sounds compared to mine. I love having a beer with this guy. I think he's hysterical. He's also a business owner, and he's hilarious. And, you know, he's helped me out a lot. And I think he's a really good person. I just also think that he likes Trump. And, but I've had friends be like, I don't think that you should be friends with him. And I'm like, is it going to happen pretty soon where people are going to be like, oh, you ran for Congress and you go meet with Congress? There's Republicans there. like, are you going to not even be able to be a Democrat in Congress because there's Republicans there and you're talking to them?
Breathe the same air, right? Yeah.
Yeah. I can't even believe that you're doing that. Like, I think that at some point, like, we have to realize that there's people that believe different things because we've grown up differently and we have different experiences. And, you know, I don't know, even with Trump, like, I think a lot of people like him because they're like, he's an asshole and I'm an asshole and I like that asshole.
He's like the asshole I see in myself. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I love myself, so I love him. You know, I don't know. I try to approach things with a little bit of understanding, but, you know, anyway, I don't even know what I think I was trying to say. I understand if you don't like the flag, but I do. But
this has been a kind of a get to know you podcast. We've been talking for an hour now, so I am going to let you go. But thank you, Pete. I mean, I feel like if you're coming out, you're going to get the full story arc now. If you listen to this podcast and then you come see Pete in November at the Improv, you're going to see all the end product of all this, all the philosophy, the formative knockout punch, all this stuff. It's all going to coalesce into a beautiful moment on stage. November at the DC Improv, right?
Yeah. Yes, it will. And will I get to meet you? Are you going to be there?
No, I will definitely be around. I'll be taking pictures. I'll say hello. Happy to walk around DC and look at national things. And I don't have a flag shirt, but we'll do what we can, Pete. So
we'll do what we can. I'm definitely going to pack it. Also, Nicole will 100% be on the trip with me.
Fantastic.
So if you want to meet her,
sure.
A lot of times she sells merch with me after the show.
Okay.
So she comes out and she sells merch and she says hi to people and, you know, a lot of times she takes pictures of me with people and she's like, you know, some people are shitty picture takers and some people really know how to hit the angles. If you have a fat chin like I do a lot, Nicole will hit the perfect angle.
Nice.
Is what I'm trying to
say.
That is
very 21st century. That is a great skill set to have right there. Yeah.
Yes, it is. And I can't wait to come to DC. I've been looking forward to this forever, just getting booked at the DC Improv. As someone who's friends with Dave Chappelle and who is a giant fan of his, like, doing comedy on the stage that he started on sounds amazing. You know, like, it's so cool. It's such a legendary room and I can't wait to come play there. And please buy tickets. You can go to my website, petelee.net. You click on events, you can get the tickets. I've already had people reaching out to me on social media saying, you know, like, hey, they're already buying tickets for it. So buy the tickets. I hope it sells out early.
Yeah.
But
we'll do our best. We'll see what we can do. Yeah.
So. Yeah, we'll do it. We'll do it.
Yeah, very but, cool. Well, Pete, great to meet you and looking forward to see you in about, I don't know, 6-7 weeks or so. Should be a lot of fun.
Yeah. Can't wait.
Cool. Take care.
Awesome to meet you. All right. Thank you.
Ladies and gentlemen, there you have it, Pete Lee. Pete makes his DC Improv headlining debut November 12th through the 14th. That is a Friday through a Sunday, and the tickets are already on sale at dcimprov.com. Go get some. And while you're over on dcimprov.com, you can check out a video clip of Pete. I think we have one of his Tonight Show sets embedded on the website. All that good stuff. If you want to find Pete on social media, it's Pete Lee Tweets on Twitter, or his name 3 times in a row on Instagram, Pete Lee, Pete Lee, Pete Lee. Simple. And with that said, let's wrap this up. Our thanks to Pete Lee for taking the time to chat. Our thanks to you for taking the time to listen. And hey, we would love to see you at the DC Improv this fall, whether it's to check out Pete Lee's debut or any of the other great acts on our schedule. But wherever you are spending your fall, we sincerely hope you're spending some of that time laughing. Thanks, as always, and we'll see you next time on the other side.